Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction tribe? Today, we are launching a new era in construction. And when I say it's the greatest time to be in construction, if you're paying attention, tribe, today is one of those. And I've been talking a lot as we intro this thing about why it's the greatest time to be in construction if you're paying attention. And the main message that I want to convey to you is that, let's face it, we're all screwed if we keep building buildings the same way and not address this housing affordability crisis. And how is this going to benefit you? Tribe, we have the master facilitators and we have the solutions to solve this by addressing the roots of the problem today. And my perspective is that there's so many smart alternatives and design discussions to change this affordability crisis. Right now, architecture is for the one percenters. I challenge us all to say, how do we design homes for us average Joes, the ordinary people, this worldwide 800-pound gorilla? We're going to solve this through building in a new era. And why I keep saying building in a new era is because we are so excited to be in collaboration and launching a really cool new platform called Era, spelt A-E-R-A. And to do that, we get to bring in one of my mentors that we get to have another Art of Construction trifecta. Go all the way back to July 25th of 2019, show 153, titled, "This is the greatest time in history to be in construction." I can't tell you how many times I have felt that and said that from when I had the honor of being on stage with Steve Burrows, and I challenged him and I challenged Digital Built Week to say, let's do something different. If we're really going to talk about how great this is, let's do it a different way. And it was a really cool, one of our best listen podcasts we've ever done. And then we had him back on show 202 talking about it takes a planet to change construction. And that's where we had him in with Matt McMullen, one of our executive directors with Art of Construction. And I think back in 2019, where I had Matt back in the sound booth figuring out how to make the audio work. And Steve Burrows and I were up on stage and we get to talk about how we have our favorite beverage, and maybe Steve will share a story with that. But what an honor to have Steve back as the trifecta, who is an amazing consultant and an amazing mentor to actually changing the art of construction. And with Steve, we also get to have Gon Zafrani, who is his partner, and we're going to share this story about how they're coming together for a new era in construction. So without further ado, let's get to know Steve again on a trifecta, and then Gon, and man, we're going to have as much fun as possible. Lock and load, tribe. Welcome back, Steve. What's your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage remains Scotch from the Highlands, that PT Scotch. We drank Laphroaig, and I'm now drinking Oban, but I'm still drinking Scotch then.
Yeah. And I actually, at the last podcast I recorded yesterday, it was with a construction tech platform called Matterport that we're doing a lot of stuff with. And right. I asked the beverage and she says, scotch. And I said, you know, the problem with Scotch, I said, it tastes like Scotch. And it, especially if you're having it 9 o'clock in the morning on stage to light the fire, because the Scotch fire, but to each his own. And that was the best shot of Scotch I've ever had.
Yeah, that was great. I don't drink it at 9 o'clock in the morning normally. But I did it just for you.
What is a favorite place you've traveled, Steve?
You know, my favorite city is Valencia in Spain, and I love it for a lot of reasons. One is, you know, it's right on the East Coast, so it's right on the Mediterranean, so beautiful geographic location, a lot of history, and some great sort of current architecture. I love the architecture of Santiago Calatrava, and that's his home. And then finally, they diverted a river that went through the city, south of the city, because it flooded occasionally, and converted it into this amazing linear park. So it's like a city where you can enjoy nature, history, the weather, and the architecture. It's just sort of got everything. And to top it all off, the food in Spain, especially in Valencia, is just fantastic. So that's my favorite place.
Awesome. And I know you've traveled a lot of really cool places. I've told your story to a lot of people of being on different TV shows or designing things like the Olympic Stadium for Beijing. And I'm sure you've visited a lot of cool places when you've been doing engineering and different work over the years on all those different places as well, right?
Yeah. Actually, the TV shows, that was pretty interesting because when I came out of college, I was really bad at speaking in public. You know, I just wanted to sort of clam up and cry. I had a very great difficulty, even in a room of people, I couldn't speak. And so Arif got me a public speaking coach and a guy called Grenville Janna. And he taught me to speak in public. And that's been great, really, because making TV shows seemed like the sort of pinnacle of putting yourself out there. So I was lucky enough to go around the world making TV shows about really the things we're talking about. Like, how does technology get applied to archaeology so you can learn something new? And it's this idea of, you know, an ancient thing like the construction industry, it's been fundamentally the same for 100 years. And now we've got all this tech coming out and it's going to change. And so the TV shows were about, you know, how you can learn from archaeology using that was laser scanning in that case. And now in archaeology, it's just the norm. They scan everything and they never scanned anything before the TV show. So, you know, I feel like it's a good example of how you make change.
100%. And what do you like to do outside of construction that we're going to talk about in this building through era that we call the art of construction?
You know, I play golf and it's sort of everything's related, right? I play golf and I sort of love golf because I say to people, golf is like playing chess on God's chessboard. So, you know, God has laid out this amazing nature and we try and find our way around it, you know, with trees and lakes and slopes and all these things that were sort of, you know, they were naturally created. And then we try and sort of master it. And so it's sort of, you can never be great at golf, right? It will teach you a lesson the next day. But every day is different. The weather's different. The courses are different. And so, I feel like it's like golf is my sort of sporting extension of my work.
I just love your talking track, Steve. Well, it's an honor to have you back here. What have you been up to since our last podcast and what issues have been on your mind?
Yeah, well, since the last, I've stayed busy. So, you know, I'm never going to retire. I like doing what I'm doing. You know, I sort of stay active and involved in things. So, you know, a few interesting things. So, you know, at Katerra, I was trying to do something, you know, trying to change construction. After Katerra, I got involved with Gropius in Germany and Austria, creating a building, a multifamily building as a product. And so, you know, if you go on the website, you can see what's been done there. Pretty interesting. A great expansion of that business right now. There's around 400 people in the business. And you know, the business is out of stealth and in the public realm and really trying to make a difference with affordable rental housing in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. So that's been interesting. I've been continuing to work with DTE Materials, where we're taking waste out of forests, you know, the forest clear out that causes the fires, and we convert it into a fireproof insulation product. And that's a chemistry IP, really interesting carbon negative product, trying to get it into the construction marketplace. And so that's been really cool, going pretty well there. And then I've continued this sort of mission of trying to help firms that are very traditional in the way they work, see the opportunities that technology has brought to their own businesses. So I consult with a range of current existing businesses, architects, engineers, construction companies, materials companies, you know, all sorts of things, really trying to help them. As I see my role now, it's more of a teacher. I think when you get to, you know, you've got a lot of experience, you get the opportunity to give something back and to help people to see, you know, opportunities and also pitfalls and to sort of, you know, create a road. And that sort of led me to GONE, right? We started talking about the problems of home ownership, that many people of my age built their net worth through real estate. So, you know, when I got married, I bought a house, and then, you know, I bought a bigger house, and then, you know, and then another house, and gradually, you know, you climb up the chain, and houses were affordable. You know, they were a multiple of three or four times your household income, got you a mortgage, you could buy a house, and you could build your net worth. And it allows you to live this sort of life that I've lived. And then I look at today where that's just not true. It costs in the United States 8 or 9 times household income to buy an average house. And I started to think, this is ridiculous. It's just gone off the scale. It's gone off the charts. Home ownership has become unaffordable. And as I spoke to people under the age of 40, I was continually being told that they saw themselves as renters for life. And I live in the United States, and the American dream, you know, is part of home ownership, is part of the American dream. And so having those conversations with GONE, I realized we both felt exactly the same about it. So we said, right, let's work together and try and provide a solution. So we started by defining affordability. And we said, affordability is having some money left over in your pocket at the end of every month. It's not about building cheaper. And so we agree on that definition. And then we said, okay, how can we create homes that people can afford to buy that leaves them money in the pocket at the end of every month? And that's our mission.
Wow. You don't, you say, I want to be a teacher, but then you say, I'm going to go after fixing the American dream. You want to teach a pretty big thing. And I commend you, Steve, for taking that stuff on, right? And so can you talk a little bit more about how homeownership is often seen as this primary pathway to achieving the American dream? Why is that?
Right. So let me just step back a little though there, Devin, because you said it's a big problem. So I made an IMAX movie called Dream Big, and you should look at it. It's on Netflix, and it's only 48 minutes long. And the purpose is to try and solve the problem of getting girls to study STEM subjects in school and be part of industries like ours. I mean, that's the mission of the movie. And I did that movie because I completely believe in that mission and met some amazing women in the construction industry who are trying to change the world. So I think, first of all, we all have that sort of ability and demand to dream big. There's no point in dreaming small. So, you know, we've set about trying to solve an affordability problem that is absolutely massive, and maybe some would say is insurmountable. When I first went to Africa and I saw the slum housing, I said, you know, this is a problem that is just insurmountable. But, you know, if you want to eat an elephant, the way you do it is one bite at a time. And so, you know, we're taking on this elephant of housing affordability. And the way we're going about that is by looking at it through the eyes of having money in your pocket at the end of every month. It leads you immediately to the conclusion that what matters to a homeowner is, number one, they're absolutely at the center of the decision making. And right now, nobody here who owns a house had any say in the design of that house. So number one, take control of your own destiny. So we're going to give the power of decision making to the customer, like number one. And then secondly, cost is everything. Once a builder's built your house, they walk away and they leave you with the consequences. So the cheaper they build it, the more it costs you to maintain it and to operate it. And we've said, that's crazy. You wouldn't buy a car like that. You wouldn't buy a refrigerator if you didn't know how much it costs to run. They have a rating on them now, and cars have information that you can learn how much does it cost to maintain a vehicle over the life expectancy of the vehicle. Homes, you don't get anything. You don't get a user manual. You don't get, nobody tells you what it's going to cost to run. It's a magical mystery tour. And we said, We're going to take that away. We're going to make all of that completely clear from the beginning that you take a home, you design it yourself, you know what it costs to build, what it costs to operate, what it costs to maintain. And then finally, your life changes all the time. And we said, your home is, all of the homes that are being built are incapable of changing in accordance with your life. You know, you meet a partner, you have children, you get older, maybe your parents move in, you work from home because of a COVID or something. You know, there's a multitude of things that happen in your life. And you need to change your house to suit your life. But houses are designed not to be changed. So we're taking that away as well. We're going to create homes that you can modify to suit your life as your life changes. Because this is your place of shelter. It's your castle. And we want to make it suitable to you, not for some home developer or some mortgage company or some other third party. It's all about you, the customer. And so by putting the customer at the center, it all started to make sense. And Gon will explain how we've done that, but it all started to make sense. And now we're ready to tell the world about what we've been doing and how we can help them to own their own home when it looked impossible just a few months ago.
How exciting. I mean, I'm just like, I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't wait till we get to hear Gon's stuff. But first, Steve, can you talk a little bit more about what happened to housing value over the years and why?
Yeah, so we started to look at that. So first of all, you know, everything I do is I try to start, describe it as a journey. So, you know, what is the origin? Where are we now? What is the destination? Which is what I've described, the destination where a homeowner is at the center of the decision-making process. And then you've got to go from the origin to the destination. And that's how I generally do things. So Gon and I started to look at the origin. How on earth did we get to this place where we think it's just how it is, right? So we just think 30-year mortgages are just how it is, right? They're a complete invention of 100 years ago. Somebody just came up with the idea of a 30-year mortgage. It's not a real thing. It's not fixed. It's a complete variable. House sizes. 50 years ago, homes were less than half the size they are today in the United States. And yet, families were bigger. So we've created homes that are twice the size with less people in them over the last 50 years. Now, you know, maybe the people have got a bit bigger too, but the fact of the matter is they're not occupied. The square footage per person in an American home is more than double what it was 50 years ago. So why are we building bigger houses? Whose benefit is it to have a bigger house? And we realize the benefit is the builders, the developers, the mortgage lenders. You know, build bigger, loan more money, make more money. The whole thing has got bloated. Then we looked at this idea of what are people trying to do today with their homes? They want to reduce their energy bill. So they put solar panels on the roof. And my analogy to that is, it's like sticking a solar panel on the top of a Ford F-150 and calling it electric vehicle. Tract homes weren't designed to have solar panels on the roof. So people don't get good advice on orientation of the panels, what you do with the energy, when you generate the energy.
Oh, wait, the solar panels actually have to have enough and like be to work and like hit the sun? You don't just revert. Oh, God.
You've got to store the energy or you do a purchase agreement with the grid that acts as your battery.
And most of them are a scam when you start. I love when people say that. I just go down the path and it's the same 30-year fixed loan now to solar panels. Doesn't matter if they work or not. It's just about the...
It is. It's
amortization rates.
Exactly. And people, you know, windows and doors. I mean, look at your business. People don't choose the appropriate windows and doors. They just choose, you know, developers are choosing on price, the cheapest.
Yeah, it's the granite countertop look is more important than the
function. Exactly. So, you know, there's a multitude of things that are sort of, the customer is not at the center of the decision making. And so we said, customers have got, you know, how do they make choices? They've got all these things that are available to them today, choices that they could make depending upon where they build. So we said, they can't find land, right? So the people said, there's no land to build on. There's lots of land to build on, And there's also lots of initiatives to help people to find land to build on. So we made that easy. We made the materials choices. There's all these new materials that are coming into the market. We made those choices easy. We made design of homes easy so that you don't have to be an architect to design your own home. And then we made it easy for the builders to build the homes. And so all of these things go forward to create affordability, to leave you money at the end of the month in your pocket, because our buildings are the right size. They're designed for you. They can change as your life changes. They're using materials that are sustainable and they're designed efficiently. And just finally, you know, here's an example I like to use a lot. You know, every home has a bedroom, like, and the primary purpose of the bedroom is for you to get a good night's sleep. And we know a lot about the science of sleep. Not one single bedroom is designed for you to get a good night's sleep. It's not even in the thought process when a bedroom is designed. And so we said, let's design spaces that give the best possible function to those spaces. So let's design a place that you can sleep that gives you the best night's sleep. That's acoustics, lighting, reverberation, you know, adjacency to other noise generating rooms, a whole host of things. And so that your home is a better home and it costs you less in overall terms than what you can buy on the market.
So what you're saying is the bedroom should be designed to sleep in, not to do everything else in.
Bedroom should be designed to sleep in.
It's so obvious, but yet we talked about on show 202 about how to designing the space, and it goes back to design, and that's kind of where we're kind of evolving this thing. So Steve, if I understand this all right, it's who decides how our homes are built? The consumer of the product. And that's correct. This Amazon effect, that construction is so hard and messy, and this is how it should be. But the consumer, like you talked about the fridge example, it's much harder to put that onto the overall structure, right? But that's what we're trying to do, is to streamline all that kit of parts, right?
Currently today, the origin of the home ownership story is that everybody in the industry makes money out of the inefficiency of the industry. And we've said that cannot continue. Materials are marked up dramatically, over 35% in the construction industry. Labor is very inefficient, about 58% utilization. And yet people and the customer pays for it. And the homes are energy hogs and the customer pays for it. And we've said that has to stop. If we want to make it affordable, it has to be efficient on every level. And that's what we're trying to do.
Love it. So Steve, what would a consumer focused home look like in your perspective before we pass the baton and get to know Gon?
Yeah. So, well, Gon can show you some images of what it would look like. But what we've done is that we've tried to take, there's a number of studies that have been done where people have been asked, they've been shown images and they've asked what sort of home would they like to live in. And they've been scored. You can go on, you know, you can Google it and you'll see a whole bunch of websites where people describe the type of home that they would like to live in. And what I can tell you is it doesn't look anything like a tract home, which looks like, you know, it's a stucco rendered image that your grandparents, you might remember from your grandparents' house. If you look at a 1930s home, just Google one and look at the images, they look exactly like they do today. That's not what people want to live in. They describe homes that look what we would call modern, right? So if I said, what does a modern house look like, Devon? An image would come into your head. And what it would look like is it would have quite a lot of glass. It would have great views. It would have some wonderful services. It would not have drywall finished to level 4 with popcorn on it. It would not look like that. It would look like it would probably be wood or metal, and it would have flat surfaces. It might have a flat roof. We've gone with a monopitch roof. We want to get the rain off easily. And it would have walls. It might be adaptable. It would be open plan, but you might have the ability to change the spaces as you use them. And we've got to realize change is coming, right? We're going to soon be having immersive 3D entertainment in our homes. And yet every living room is designed for a flat screen about 14 feet away from where the sofa is. And that's not how we're going to consume things like that. So there's a lot of change coming to our homes. And we've said, let's take what people would like to their home to look like and make that real. Give them those choices so that their home is somewhere they can be really proud of it and it looks like the future and not the past. And so our home designs look very much like the home designs that you will see when you Google what sort of home would people like to live in the future. But we've made that real and affordable and right-sized.
Steve, thank you so much for teeing this thing up. So many great perspectives. What an honor for all of us to have you leading the Art of Construction tribe as the master of the master facilitators. So let's move this thing forward and get a little bit in the business and bring one of our superstars, Gon, to the table, get to know his story. Gon, welcome to the Art of Construction. What's your favorite beverage?
It's a pleasure to be here, Devin. So, you know, I'm from Israel and then I grew up in Belgium. So I will say it's beer, definitely. And I've learned to appreciate beer in Belgium growing up there. And the surprising enough, nowadays, you have a host of microbreweries since a few years all over the US who are brewing Belgian style beers. And I love them. So I go everywhere, you know, every little town, there's a brewery. I ask for if they make a Belgian style and I take that and I enjoy it.
So Dublin style, wherever you're at, huh? And you're all over the globe these days. It's been fascinating getting to know you and the time differential of where you're recording this, where you're in Paris currently, and we're going to kind of unpack some of that stuff about traveling the world. But what is your favorite place that you've traveled?
So I'm going to go with home, right? When home for me is the desert. I actually grew up in a small kibbutz in the middle of the desert, in the southern part of Israel, near the Palestinian border. And that's my route. So when I'm in the US, I love going to the deserts. My favorite one is the park Joshua Tree and Pioneer Town. That really, when I arrived to that place, I felt like back at home. And yeah, those are the type of places I would like to go to. It's also an escape from our kind of constructed, you know, our cities, our all of our constructed built world. So I really, really like going out into the wild and especially the deserts.
Actually took our last family trip there to Joshua Tree. And it's fascinating how you'll come over there and just see this nature thing, kind of like Steve talked about with our aligned passions of golf. Tell us about your favorite hobby or interest outside of construction arena we're going to talk about that we passionately call the Art of Construction, with you and I launching a new era in construction together here today.
So same vibe. I bike. So, you know, once in California, I spent the last, 11, 12 years in the US, and I love riding. So I got a road bike, I get on it, click in, clean the brain, and I just go for hours. That's my go-to. I also kind of go with in small groups, but less often. I prefer going solo and really be almost like a cleanse, you know, for the brain. So that's really my favorite sport. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Steve, you've brought so many great people through the Art of Construction as your mentorship. Steve, how did you and Gon connect?
Gon and I connected through LinkedIn. So we started, you know, I tend to spread my opinions around the social media quite a bit. And I try to encourage people to challenge some of the things that I'm saying. And so, you know, Gon did that. You know, he got in touch with me and we talked a lot about the problems, and we pushed and pulled a little bit, and I like him. And I think we became friends through those conversations. And then he came to see me. He was living in Los Angeles and I live near San Francisco. He came to see me and we went out in my sports car and we drove up Mount Diablo and with the roof down. And we carried on talking. And about halfway up the mountain, I said, we should go into business together, Gon. We just seemed to be completely aligned with what he wanted to do and what I wanted to do. And he said, let's do it. And that's pretty well our story, right?
Absolutely. I remember, Steve, you were saying, you know, there will be a time where we'll disagree and we'll have to figure out how we handle that. And that took a long time before we hit that point, right? That was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I think I'm sort of a strong believer that, you know, you get to know somebody, you build trust. And the good the value of trust is that you can have passionate disagreement, but not lose your friendship. And I basically said to Gon, and I do mentor and coach quite a number of people, and I'm pretty consistent about this. I've said, you know, you've got to build trust with your team that they really believe that it's about us and not about me. And then you can have disagreements and not carry a scar around afterwards. And so, you know, I said to Gon, it's been great. We agree with all these things. And I think we're completely aligned, but the test of our relationship will be when we disagree. And I have to say, just to finish that, we've had some disagreements. I would say, as we've started to build out this solution, we've had moments where we really don't agree with each other. And what's been great is that, you know, sometimes I'm right, sometimes Gon's right, but we're able to agree on something and then move on. And we don't carry around the fact that we passionately disagreed about something. So I'd say our friendship's stronger now than it's ever been, and it's getting better every day. And I'm really happy about that.
And therein lies, I thank you both for sharing that story, is what it means to be a master facilitator, because construction is not just one way, but we do have to figure out how to put a sticker on that refrigerator. And sometimes you have to agree to disagree. And that's what we're unpacking through this Art of Construction Master Facilitator group. Gon, what is your story that led you to working with Steve?
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, Steve has the moment from that moment on. So what happened before is that I really couldn't take anymore the status quo. So I was, as Steve said, I was in LA. I was working at Autodesk, and this is a very large firm. Many of the audience probably know it for different tools like AutoCAD or Revit. And so this is a very large operation, right? So you imagine this is corporate America. It's thousands and thousands of developers, I think 4,000 developers. And increasingly, as you work in these organizations, there is a lot of pressure from left to right that is becomes senseless at some point, right? And I thoroughly enjoyed my time at Autodesk, and I am really proud of what we did with the cloud deployment team. I have several friends still in that group that I really often reach out to. But I had a past experience in enterprise. I was consulting in tech in San Francisco and also in Paris for a couple of years for an American company, Pivotal. And so I know what it is. And I also know what a smaller team can do. And so I took upon myself to say, okay, let's look at the situation. And this was really April, June last year. So that new crisis, that what we call the poly crisis or the multifaceted crisis, right? Where the stock started to tank, all the stocks started to tank, the real estate started to rise. Large companies were making massive buyouts of entire cities of real estate. And this was not going to be tenable. And I could see that the situation is going dire for not just one generation, but probably two or three. Right, everyone that has lived through 2008 as a young adult, and then the next crisis and the next crisis, how many can we take? So I looked at the fundamentals, and I knew how to do it because I'm an architect, and before my software career, and before 2008, I was in architecture. Now, you know, I should clear out, because I know it's really important for the AYA. I'm not officially an architect. I'm an engineer. I'm an industrial engineer, and I was allowed to build in Belgium for my parents a home, right? And I was allowed to build a home. It's a little under 100 square meter, so that would be about 900 square foot, and I did it for 140,000 euros back in 2007, 2008, That was really amazing, because what I found working with my master of architecture, Wim Kuivers, what we found is we can maximize the volume, but make smart, intelligent choices around materials and how to leverage the natural properties of materials, like the thermal mass of stone, to actually lower the cost of operating the home. And so that's for operation. And for construction, we immediately went to prefabricated timber components, and we kept the design extremely simple. And so my parents were able, after 13 years of owning land, they were able to build their own home on that piece of land. And they were, you know, just about able to do so. Like I said, we came from the kibbutz in Israel. My parents, my mom is a teacher. My dad is a security agent. You know, he did the military for over 8 years. So he's a professional in that realm. But, you know, a pretty modest background, right? Pretty modest upcoming. And so I was really proud to be able to do that. So back forward, we are last year, June. And I say, hey, this is possible. I want to give this gift. I want to put this in the hand, this technology, which is not really, that's not the new technology part, right? These are old known techniques of architects have known for thousands of years. Some of the technology we're using today with ERA is directing people to use, for example, radiant floor heating. And radiant floor heating is a technique that was actually pioneered by the Romans, right? 1,000 years ago. So you know, really bring it all together. I knew that there was a solution, and I wanted to put all the pieces together in an accessible solution. And today with online, you can get straight to the customer, straight to the families, and let them design a home that they can actually afford, and that is a beautiful home for their own life.
What a cool story. So it's called ERA. What does ERA stand for? What's the tagline behind AERA?
So it's not an acronym. It's the old writing of ERA, right? And it also means, and it has the meaning of light and free as a bird, right? So it's, we are, Steve and I are deep optimists, right? We're also happen to be both of us extreme realists, right? So we, you know, really challenging any kind of false hopes. So we really are hitting this the spot of yes, it's possible. There is a lot to do, right? But yes, it's possible. And the, here are a few pieces of the puzzle, and let's put them together in a package that is usable, that you can immediately act on, right? And so that is ERA, and we think the industry has been disconnected and siloed, as Steve explained, right? The incentives are misaligned at every step of the way, so badly that we have arrived to a situation where, you know, it's enough that there is a small beginning of an economic tilt, and everybody panics and everything stops, right? And that's actually a disaster for American families.
All right, the stage is set. We're in a new era of building. I want Steve, you to answer this question and then pass the baton to Gon. Let's niche in here a little bit. Steve, what if architecture was democratized, and what does that mean to you?
I think we're talking about single family homes and single family home ownership. And, you know, here's a fact, only 2% of homes have an architect involved within them. So 98% of homes around the world have no architect involved in their design. So what we're trying to do is to say that in an era of artificial intelligence, it is possible to allow a customer to design their own home within the constraints of our traditional architecture. So architects make choices when they do design a home based on a set of rules, some of which are written down, and some of which are simply things that they've learned over time. And so we've taken those rules and automated them so that you can choose a room. You can choose to design a house how you live, and the spaces will be organized as an architect would organize them. So we call that democratized architecture. It's putting the power of architecture in the hands of a customer. And frankly, we do that a lot. You know, we do, when you go on a website, you want to buy a car, you go on a website and they give you a series of choices that you can make within a series of constraints that mean that that car is fit to be driven down the road. And so we're doing the same thing. There is a code, you know, there is a housing code of practice that has to be complied with, and we comply with the code, but we give the choices to the customer within the code. So we call it democratized architecture. If you can think of a better name, you know, we always have to explain it. But that's the idea behind it, that we allow everybody to be an architect and in designing their home without having to train as an architect.
Don?
Yeah, I just wanted to tag on to that, you know, kind of taking the technology angle for a second, right? So we've all seen the latest advances in AI. We've seen what, you know, text to images can produce, and this is all very exciting. It is very exciting, right? It is very impressive, and GPT-4 and whatnot. That said, when you take a step back and you're actually after solving a real world physical problem, you start with the low hanging fruit, and so we are, right? And so before jumping to a super complicated algorithm, and we do have an algorithm, I'll talk about it a little bit. We're starting with the foundations, right? We're starting with rules, which, as Steve said, some of them are not really written anywhere, right? They are known to us because we have been building, you know, and Steve has been building for 4 decades, right? So this is this partnership, right? An architect and a group of architects, right? All of our company is split into people who design buildings and people who write software. And so we have kind of these two brains that are collaborating together to actually encode the rules of good architecture, right? And good architecture, we can talk about that. So all of the properties Steve mentioned, the angle that I really love is that, you know, if you use nature correctly and if you work with and design with nature correctly, you're actually directly saving money, right? Because money is everything that nature gives us, right? It's actually time, you know, time is money, energy is money, materials are money, right? Raw material sources, all of that is transformed into money. And so when you use those resources more intelligently, and so you have good design, you're actually saving on cost, right? First costs and operational costs.
Yeah, we always talk about begin with the end in mind. And when it comes to construction, it's about good design, right? But you have to streamline that to be efficient. Anything you'd add to that, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. And you know, when just to add on to what Gon said, it is all about money. So what we've done within our solution, when you make a choice, you see the consequences of that choice immediately in financial terms. Because so many times, it's hard, you know, if you, again, use the car analogy, you know, if you change the wheels, then it tells you what the additional cost is. And so we're trying to explain to people in total cost terms, that the choices, as they make choices, they see the impact of those choices. So it allows them to go, if I do that, then this. So maybe I should try that. And so it gives you a path as a customer using it. You start to realize that all of the control is in your hands. And so money is the common theme, right? People may not know whether one material is better than another material in its use, but they will understand the financial impact of that choice. And so that's how we're giving people the power. That's sort of the sort of lever that they can pull to be able to know when they should make a different decision. And we think that's really important. You just can't do that right now when you buy a house. You know, you have no choices other than countertops, and you have no idea what the value of your choice is. And so we're giving those numbers to people. We've got one of our team was with me at Katerra, and he's been putting together a sort of cost methodology that sits behind the technical methodology that gives you that information every time you make a choice.
100%. And at the beginning, you had made a comment that Steve, I want to challenge you a little bit going into this next question, because you said, I love a good challenge. And you talked about how 35% markups on supply chain to where that can be cut out and it's waste. I would challenge the waste is the handoffs from this crappy execution to where you need to have these specialists. Like in my case, I own a window and door company. We could be busy all day, every day with unpaid service, but somebody has to go do this stuff of repeating and fixing this stuff. And why I state that, and I want you to challenge me back a little bit to say, legacy businesses need to be changed, right? And that's why a big part of starting this platform and what we're coining and calling system built about, you got to have good systems for the built environment, not just the digital with a D, but physically building stuff. So Steve, can you talk about that and then advancements in the system?
So you got to remember when Katerra started, it was basically a supply chain company. And Katerra started because, and you know this, Devin, because you had conversations with Katerra about doors and windows. But when Katerra started, it was because the markup from the OEM, the original manufacturer of anything, to the customer is significant. I say 35% in the construction industry. You know, it depends, obviously. That's not uniform. It depends on what the product is. But there's a markup. If you take a typical customers buying things through Amazon, the typical markup on OEMs is more like 15%. So first of all, the construction industry does have high markups from OEM to customer. Why is that? Well, you know, quite often there are people that sit in between the OEM and the buyers called distributors. So we have these people who aggregate from supplies from OEMs, and they distribute them out to the customers, steel stockholders. There are lots of them, and that costs money, right? That's an inefficiency. So you can't buy a customer can't buy from an OEM in the construction industry. A contractor can't buy from an OEM. A subcontractor can't buy from an OEM. A distributor does. So the process is OEMs to distributors, distributors to subcontractors, subcontractors to contractors, contractors to customers, right? Every step of the way, there's a markup, right? And the customer pays for it all. And we're saying that needs to end, right? Because we're in a period where there are many other industries have found a much smoother connection from OEM to customers than the construction industry. There's a lot of money there.
I totally agree, but you don't do it overnight like Katerra, where you just push everybody to the side and do it at one time. That's the part of you have to, all those things, you know, how do you eat the elephant that you and I are always talking about, Steve? It's like one master facilitator at a time to understand change for the good and removing waste.
I agree, Devin, but go back to my original premise, right? This is the origin. Here's where we are today. Right. Well, this is how it is today. How would we like it to be in the future? We would like to lower the cost to the customer of buying goods from OEMs. Right. That's our goal, our dream, if you like. Then the question is, how do we get from here to there? And you know, we are proposing some steps to enable us to move closer to our dream than we are today. So we're not trying to, you know, boil the ocean, but we have found a way in which the in addition to the way the industry is today, there are new materials coming into the marketplace. So there are people developing mushrooms that replace leather, right? There are people developing those things. I talked about DTE materials, where we're developing a natural material that's carbon negative from a waste product into the construction industry. And there are hundreds of examples of these. Bamboo is an amazing material. So we're saying there's both the issue of existing materials and the issue of new materials finding a place into the value chain.
And this is a whole podcast in itself. And we're trying to, an overarching here, one last comment and then gone. I want you to kind of bookend this and go on to the next thing, because I've been in meetings all week trying to understand, okay, Anderson Windows is developing a new team that they're calling the NTB, the non-traditional build. So it's taking people, and I commend people for looking at it that way and then having conversations with people. And that's what we're trying to do with the master facilitators through ERA. So where you take these different processes and products and put them together into building in a new way. And there's so much to talk about that. And then, Steve, I want you to kind of circle this back after gone. You kind of put yours thing to Steve. I really want you to talk about our big passions here with the Art of Construction Master Facilitators around system-built construction and tie that into the potential to democratize architecture, as you talked about. Gone?
Yeah, so again, I'll continue here on the flexibility, right, and the choice from the customer. When I always say, like, software, it really designed to soften and make negotiations much easier, right? Instantaneous, you can go back and forth. In our industry, we have change orders that need, sign off from two or three different parties. This is very different. When you modernize and when you put the decision-making online, create a relationship between the builder and its customer, suddenly decisions are much easier to be made, right? And so driven by the total cost of ownership, the impact on your build costs and the impact on your monthly bills, that's an information. The availability of the material choice, we will try to guide customers to the materials that are locally available and demand less logistics from the builder. So this is really the difference that software can make. And we want to go straight to building homes and enabling builders to build better homes for customers.
So Devin, let's just talk about master facilitators just for a moment. You know, one of the things that I'm seeing in the construction industry as we see all the change that's happening is that everybody has a point solution. Everybody. So they are trying to solve a particular problem. We have a fragmented industry and somebody has another solution for a fragment, right? And so it's not helpful, right? It's always a competing fragment. And one of the things we need to do is to bring our industry together so that we can all focus on the fundamental problem. So what Gon and I have been doing is we've said the fundamental problem is affordable home ownership, right? So everything we're doing, we're trying to bring materials, suppliers, customers, and builders together. That we're trying to link them. So we're doing software, much like Gon says, we're making the way in which they can work together in this common problem of solving affordable home ownership. We're providing a platform for that. The way I see the master facilitators is that we can do that on a much bigger scale in the industry. And one of the things that the art of construction has been so great at is, you know, bringing these new ideas to the fore. So you've been highlighting a whole series of point solutions, and you've also been highlighting some integrators who've taken some of those point solutions and tried to bring them together, whether it's offsite construction or a different way to do supply chain or a different way to pay. You know, they're trying to solve some part of the fragmentation problem that the industry's experienced. And we're doing it for home ownership, but there's a much bigger industry problem around fragmentation. Nobody has 1% market share in the construction industry anywhere in the world. So the most fragmented industry in the world. The master facilitators is trying to sort of say, let's take that problem, that origin point, and create a point in which people can actually come together on any particular industry problem and collaborate with each other to solve it in an integrated, holistic way. And, you know, who wouldn't applaud that? Everybody should be part of a movement that sort of brings us together as a family of companies and businesses and individuals to focus on the big problems, which is that, you know, every human on this planet has a fundamental right to food and water and air and shelter. It's a fundamental basic right. And we want to give them that in the most effective, affordable way so that they can live the best life that they can have. And I think as a mission, the master facilitators, you know, got to applaud you. Take my hat off to you. You know, great job on what you're trying to do. It's fantastic.
Well, you have the best laid plan, and then somebody jumps in and says, let's have a shot of bourbon together on stage, or a scotch, and it was the best scotch I've ever had. And this was not a slide that we put together for today's conversation. And when we were doing all the pre-interviews, I said, this is going to have to be several podcasts because how do we eat this elephant is yeah. 1 hour at a time, one podcast at a time that we go into the master facilitators to have meaningful change. So yeah. we will definitely have another podcast where we're going to dive into a little bit deeper of the why and talk about how can you design a home to receive and use renewable resources and talk about, you know, all of these different things around how to build with a new era. But Steve, with all of this, tell us about building with a new era with your platform era.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to create this platform, right? So the people ask us, who are our customers? And our customers are material suppliers who want to find the market. They're builders who want to build better sustainable homes. They want to find customers. But fundamentally, the heart of our business is the customer. And so what we've said is we want people to go onto our platform who want to own a home. And when they go onto the platform, they can do a multitude of things. They simply have to describe the way I want it to be is it's sort of a quiz, right? You go onto the platform and you can have some fun answering some questions about how you want to live your life, you know, who you are and how you want to live your life. And out of that comes a home design. It finds a piece of land or several pieces of land, and it designs a house, and it puts the house on the land, and it tells you how much is it going to cost to build that house on the land, how much we think you should pay for that land, and what we think you would make if, as though you were a micro developer, how much money we think you would make for yourself in terms of increasing your net worth as a result of building this house on that piece of land. So that's the way we're trying to do it. That you have all the decision-making process. The land you choose because you say, oh, I've got children and they go to this school. And so we say, well, that immediately puts us into land within a school district or whatever it might be. So behind the quiz questions that you're answering are, you know, choices are being made for you as you choose to design the house. You say, oh, I'm really into old cars. And our algorithm says, oh, well, you need a workshop. And a workshop needs to be about this big. And so, and we design the workshop into the house. And so, you know, you're not having to understand exactly what's happening under the hood. But when you buy a car, you know, you assume that it works. And that when you turn the key, the engine starts. It's exactly the same for us. But gradually, you will be able to refine the place, the house, the design, the materials, make all those choices. So this is all about you. And our goal is it leaves you more money in your pocket at the end of the month than any other way in which you can get into home ownership. And so that's how our platform is intended to work. The materials and the builders come in because we're going to be saying to the builders, this is the home design and this is the price. And if you build it for that price, you can have the project.
I absolutely love that. On the next podcast, since we're running out of time here for this one, because I know Steve has to catch a flight here with all his moving parts, we're going to challenge Gon from that baseline, and we'll put links to the show notes of the website and all this stuff being launched. But on the next podcast, we're going to really dig in and challenge Gon to talk about, is it possible to truly know how much this home will cost based on the premise that you talked about, Steve? And then how will Era allow for this to happen? And there's so many exciting things we're talking about Steve, when you really put it out there to say, how could Era change the entire home building process? And we have so many exciting things we're talking about that we're going to put examples into yeah. how all this works, because this kindling here or this fireside chat, boy, we have a lot of tentacles happening and so many master facilitators working together that I can't, there's so many things we, on the podcast, this is our LinkedIn, right? This is the public that we know what's happening. But yeah. boy, if you want to join a group that's moving construction forward, now is the time to join the AOC Master Facilitators, because that's yeah. where Steve and Gon are going to be bringing all these people coming together into our test lab, where we're going to be putting this stuff put together for mainstream. So the last questions we always ask on every podcast for the last 300 and the next 3,000. Gon, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology in construction?
Yep. So I think it looks a lot more for the builder and for building to be a steward of homes, right? So a home isn't created from scratch and then destroyed. A home is much more part of the cycles of nature. So imagine a home that's built with components that are made locally, that are put together, without necessarily damaging those materials. And for the materials at the end of the life cycle of the home, be able to go back to nature. So this is it's the job number one for the climate change that we're seeing. That is the huge wave that we have to address. And so this is my crystal ball, right? If we really take it far, I think this is what we have to aim for.
All right, Steve, what's your crystal ball? Four generations of doing this. What's the next four generations of the crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
You know, Devin, I don't think it's, my goal in life is to be happy, right? That's my goal in life. And it's really not complicated. And I think, there's a lot of things that go into being happy, right? You know, it includes love, and it includes health, it includes feeling safe and secure. And so, everything we're doing is to try and make everybody who we're involved with, make them happy as they can be. And I go, if people will achieve their potential when they're happiest, and it's very hard to achieve your potential if you're unhappy. And so, it might seem a flippant answer, but it's my goal in life is to be as happy as I can be, and to also help other people to be as happy as they can be, whatever that might mean for them.
I genuinely love that answer. And Steve, every time I'm with you, I'm feeling happier and inspired. So thank you for that. Seriously.
Good. My work is done.
In our last question, we always ask, Gan, what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about, to go out there and crush it, to grow their business until we talk again?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I really think it's about building the homes people want, right? I know this sounds cheesy, but I don't think this is what's happening. And we've talked about the different problems with that, with the size of the home. Right now in the US, there are no starter homes. So families who are beginning to make a life for themselves aren't able to find homes that are fit for them. So, I think for builders, really is how can you actually provide homes that people want? How can you get closer to your customers and build a home that they really want to own?
Awesome. Steve, bring us home. What is that one thing you want to leave our master facilitators to think about, to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, I just want people to be inspired by this podcast, to reach out and want to be part of working with us. The more people the more people in the movement, the more successful it will be. And so, what I would say to anybody who hears this is, as a result of listening to this, just do one thing, and that is reach out, say hello, ask to how you can be part of it. And there's a place for everyone. So don't hesitate. We'll always find something for you to do to help us to make a difference in this world.
Quick recap here. I got to start by, every time I get to talk with Steve Burrows, I get to pick something up that just is so cool. And my quote that from Mr. Steve Burrows, when I asked him what he loves, our same aligned passions of golf, he said, golf is like God's chess match with nature. What about a full circle to where, when I met him on stage and he talked about how construction is still done back where bricks were the size of a hand and OSB was this 4 foot by 8 foot, because that's the biggest one person can do it. But what if it's a full assembly system built construction? And that stuff just blows my mind. But at the end of the day, he helps us all have as much fun as possible, because construction is messy and hard, and it puts you and it grounds you to figure out this wild ride we're on of trying to figure out how to take over a house that a crusty contractor left you with the magical mystery tour. and the builders need to come, and we got to figure out how to all come together, and we need to run at this problem. And if you talk to me about what is one word of this problem about housing affordability, the one word that I would capture is waste. Because we install stuff multiple times in this whole OEM to the customer conversation we had about high markups. It's this gooey middle of trying to just solve the inefficiencies of bad design and bad execution. And we talked about how software needs to make choices easier from a connected platform. That is really effing hard art of construction. And that is why AOC is so excited to be a connector through master facilitators and launching a new era and building through era. Because we cannot go with another fragmented competing solution, because that is not the answer. And I can tell you, I have been so jazzed and so grounded by these conversations with Steve and Gon, because they're not about just selling a software. They're about creating a solution through the problem. And so we broke this down into four simple categories to say it's about putting the materials, the construction tech, through system built, brought to you by the master facilitators that we are influencers to the new era of customers. I cannot wait for what is next. So many things happening. I'm telling you, Tribe, if you want to join the true masters, right now is the time. Click on the show notes, reach out to Steve or myself. Let us know where you're at in your journey, and let's meet in the middle, and we'll figure this all out together. Because the only constant is change. Either we're growing or dying, and we're not dying here in the Master Facilitators Program. We're super honored to have Steve and Don part of this movement and this tribe in building in a new era. Crush it out there, tribe.